Okay, well, let's might as well get this show on the road. First of all, thank you all for being here at the Air Pollution Control District meeting of June 21st, 2023. If you would please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Arnold.
I'm here.
Director Bright.
Here.
Director Darris.
Here. You say Darris or Davis?
Darris.
Thank you.
Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Hammond.
Here.
Director Marks or Director Francis is currently absent. Director Newton.
Here.
Director Ortiz Legg.
Here.
Director Paulding.
Here.
Director Pichon.
Here.
Director Seacrest.
Here.
Director Wixom.
Here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to now go into closed session. If there's anyone in the public who would care to address the closed session item. Okay, seeing none. So we'll move now into closed session. I'll ask our, we're not ready yet?
No, you're ready.
Oh. Thank you. Ask our attorney to please report on our closed session.
Nothing to report. No reportable action.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the consent agenda, but before we do, I just want to mention that we are under a time crunch today. A number of us need to be on the road right around 11 o'clock. So we're going to move forward and see if we can't get through this. So is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none. We've got 8 items.
Madam Chair.
Sir.
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion then if you're ready for.
Thank you.
Okay. Items A1 through 8, consent agenda approval.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call, please?
Motion is to approve the consent agenda items A1 through A8. It was made by Director Hammond and seconded by Director Ortiz Legg. Director Arnold.
Yes.
Director Bright.
Yes.
Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks is absent. Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Seacrest.
Yes.
Director Wixom?
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Vote is unanimous.
Very good. Thank you. We'll move now to public comment period. Members of the public may address this board on matters other than those scheduled on this agenda. I have one speaker slip, Rachel Toady.
Good morning, board members. It's been quite some time since I've been here, about 3 years probably. For the new members, I would like to say that I'm Rochelle Toady. I'm one of the co-founders of Concerned Citizens for Clean Air. And that group sent you a letter about 2 weeks ago, and I personally sent you a letter also. I wanted to give you a little background on the history of Concerned Citizens for Clean Air. It began in 2010 when some of the founding members met here at the APCD meeting. We had come separately to talk about the air quality issue and then ran into each other and noticed, you know, people lining up to speak, and then afterwards just went up and said, hello, I'm concerned too. And that's how it all began. And it grew quickly. Some of the things that Concerned Citizens for Clean Air has advocated for is more information on the health impacts from the particulate matter. It also requested the 2012 monitoring that was done on the Mesa with 22 or 23 monitors so we could actually map the plume and people would know where their homes were and where the dust was going. I'm following up also on my letter to you, and I wanted to bring up a couple of points that I had not put in there. One was in speaking to the US EPA years ago, it was mentioned to me that there's no safe level for PM10. And I personally have spoken to people with health problems. For example, I've spoken to someone who moved to the Mesa with a child that was well, and the child became asthmatic. So they moved off the Mesa, and the child recovered. I've talked to people that got spots on their lungs after 10 years exposure, new asthma diagnoses, the Nipomo cough, which I actually have. The APCD's mission is to realize and preserve clean air for all. I'm trying to speed up here. Monday and Tuesday, we received air warning alerts, and we had high levels of dust on the Mesa. So it's important that in the next annual report and work plan that more is done to mitigate this problem. And I think that in closing, I'd like to say that we appreciate your efforts in providing this clean air and wish you to have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any other speaker slips, but is there anyone else in that would care to address this board? Okay, seeing none. We'll close public comment and bring it to the APCO's report.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. Gary Willey, Air Pollution Control Officer. Going to keep this report short today since we just met 20 days ago. I'll give you a couple updates on some wood burning and wood smoke stuff. But other than that, we're going to get out of here as soon as possible today. I understand there's some other things going on. In your consent agenda, you approved us moving into the new wood smoke plan for fireplace chains outs. The state of California has made a lot of changes. And we have an opportunity to get into a new program to help with mostly with heat pumps for disadvantaged or environment and economically disadvantaged individuals to put heat pumps in their homes to replace the wood burning devices. So we're hoping that program works out. We tried to talk the state into just keeping the same program. The whole group of air districts did. We couldn't do it. So we're going to try to see if we can utilize these funds and get them out to our community. You'll be seeing something on the actual plan and the implementation of it in September after we get a little more information from the state. Prescribed burning went very well this year. Camp Roberts did a very successful burn over 5,000 acres. Quiet. So weather was good. Everything worked out well. And we just recently did the burn behind Cal Fire did the burn behind Pismo, the Thousand Hills area, and that went off great. It was kind of marginal, but we made the call. The weather held out. They've got some good burning done there, so helping protect the city of Pismo and that area from wildfires and the smoke impacts that occurred with them. So very fortunate that year went very well. I do have one other thing to talk about. I have a retirement recently announced that we'll be losing our grants lead, Vince Kirkhoff, to retirement at the end of August. Vince has done a terrific job and sets a very high bar. With Vince as the lead, we developed the grant templates that save us lots of legal review. We use a template method, and we are allowed to fill in certain aspects without getting sign off, so that saves us a lot of money on each grant that we do. And Vince kind of led the charge with that. When an oddball grant would get up, Vince would craft some language that usually came through without any significant edits from our legal team. So Vince has set a very high bar. He's kept our contract legal fees down, thus maximizing the money that we can use internally for admin. Much appreciated, a job well done. Vince is in the audience. You want to stand up, Vince?
Thank you.
And with that, I'll close this APCO report.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on now to board business. First item is B1, hearing to adopt the fiscal year 23-24 final budget.
Chairperson Bright, we should open the floor for public comment. It doesn't look like there are any speaker slips, but we should open the floor for public comment on the APCO's report.
Oh, okay, thank you, I'm sorry.
Yep, no problem.
If it's not in front of me, I just... okay, so here we go. Public comment, any public comment regarding the APCO's report? Okay, seeing none, we'll close it. Now we'll bring it back to board business. Okay, who will be giving this?
I'll be doing the
okay. Thank you.
Presentation, and it's going to be brief because it's the exact same thing that we saw 20 days ago. There are no changes, so I'll just remind you of what you're voting on. It's a balanced budget. Technically, it goes down because of the budget adjustments during the year. If you look over here, they're slightly up, but technically it's down. So it's very balanced, very conservative. We won't be needing any adjustments anytime during the year. So here we go. This is just a quick overview of the budget and where the money goes. You can see that technically we have a budget reduction. That's because we don't realize our grant funding until we receive the admin money from it. So it's just a matter of that and the fact that we've continually kept costs down. We've been reducing staff and members over the years. So our budgets are, if you compare it to the county or any other agency, we have a very, very small increase, much below inflation. So over the past number of years, we've gone from 24 staff members, two contractors. Currently, we're at 19 staff members and no contractors, other than some student interns. So pretty lean. Two of the positions, well, actually, we have 20 right now, but we're going to keep them, two of our positions open during the next year to see what happens with the state grant money and see if that comes in, then we can look at reallocating them. But we wanted to make sure we saw what the state was going to do with the budget during this times. Of budget uncertainty at the state and the money that could pass through, so we're being very conservative on that. Just a little bit, you know, we are primarily salaries and services, 77% salaries and benefits. The money revenues, about a third comes from our permit fees. About a fifth comes from DMV fees, which used to be more like a third, but the value of our dollar has gone down and down over time. It's the same fixed rate, it's not indexed to inflation, so that part about it. There was a bill that is in state purgatory right now. It's in a spot where it's not going anywhere that was going to allow an increase in those dollars on the vehicle registrations to try to match inflation that's happened over the last 30 years. I don't know if that's going to come out next year. It may wait until after the new state house sits. You know, next year will be the second year. They may want to wait until they bring it back, but it will come back up. Those dollars are just, you know, it's 30 year old dollars. Dollar has changed a lot in 30 years, and since it's not indexed up, it's not covering the cost that it was meant to do before. So it's one of those things that should be done, but this year was just a bad timing. Another thing I want on revenue is just to show you where they are. You already saw it in the pie graph, so I'll just skip over that, and if there's any questions, we can come back to it. Reserves, our reserves are still very healthy, as according to our fiscal plan, we've utilized some of them this year as our permit fees are gradually raised up over time after losing the refinery's $500,000 in permit fees. And so this is all within our fiscal plan, and we still have very healthy reserves. And I expect that there will be money coming that we didn't book that will be going into reserves to offset a lot of that. And who knows, we may not even actually lose any reserves next year after it's backfilled from unexpected revenues from grant funding. And then this is my recommendation. This is the second hearing, and you're allowed to illegally adopt this budget at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. There are any questions to my right? To my left? Okay. We'll take this to the public. I don't have any speaker slips. I don't see anybody rushing to the podium. So we'll bring it back for a motion. We have a motion and a second.
So motion to approve the final budget. Motion is made by Director Gibson and seconded by Director Hammond. Director Arnold.
Yes.
Director Bright.
Yes.
Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Seacrest.
Yes.
Director Wixom.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Vote is unanimous.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We'll move on now to item B2, employment contract modification for the air pollution control officer.
The requested action is for approval of an employment contract for the current APCO, Gary Willie, which includes a salary increase and extension of his current contract term. And the proposed contract is attached to the agenda as item B2.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions to my right?
I had one more question, or a question, that may be in this and I missed it, but does this contract include a cost of a COLA within the contract, or is it just?
Yeah. Yes, it does include the same staff cost of living adjustments and any benefits to staff and any of the benefits that are approved if your board approves that.
Will you remind me, Gary, is it what the COLA is in this agency?
It's every year it's brought to your board in September in closed session, and you decide that COLA at that point in time.
What is it now? What is it in your contract? Just the COLA that
it's whatever the staff gets.
Okay, so do you remember what it is right now?
But there is no COLA for this next fiscal year approved yet. So it'll be up to your board. It was 4% last year.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that was my question.
Yeah.
Thank you. To my left? No? Okay. We'll open this up for public comment. I have no speaker slips, but if anyone would care to. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back for discussion or a motion. Please.
I'll move to approve the adjustment to the APCO's salary for the next 2-year contract.
I'll second that and just say, Gary, I think you're doing a good job, and we appreciate the work you do with the organization.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Wait, under discussion, may I?
Discussion. Certainly.
I just want to make a comment, and Gary, you know I appreciate you, and I think you're doing a great job. But consistent with every single year you've worked with me, I am hesitant to be raising salaries, especially beyond the COLA, which we'll assume will be somewhere similar to what it's been at the 4%, at a time when we're seeing all indication that state and federal monies may be lessening and our future revenues are uncertain. I specifically kind of think about the Phillips 66 and what the future of that is, because it's been a big part of our revenues in the past, and we'll have to shift and either put that out onto the smaller businesses or figure something out. Anyway, nothing personal. I will not be supporting the motion. Probably no surprise.
Surprise.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, then we have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call, please?
Motion is to approve the proposed changes to the APCO's employment contract. The motion is made by Director Ortiz Legg and seconded by Director Paulding. Director Arnold.
I'm a no.
Director Bright.
Yes.
Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Seacrest.
Yes.
Director Wixom?
Yes.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg?
Aye.
Motion passes 10-1.
Thank you. Okay, we now are moving on to item B3. Blue whales and blue skies. Oh, what? What's wrong?
I'll turn this on. This program has been going on in the state for a number of years, and it's kind of taken off. It started out down in Ventura, Santa Barbara, and they were trying to get emission reductions from the shipping traffic and save the whales at the same time. When you look at a ship that goes through, shipping is our largest source of emissions in coastal California, all up and down. They burn dirty fuels, and they burn a lot of them when they're going faster. And if the square of the speed is proportional to the amount of fuel it burns. So when you slow down, it saves you a lot of fuel. So this started out, the shipping companies were like, oh, this sounds like a good, we'll try it. A few tried it, and they started saving fuel, and whale strikes went down, and it sort of caught on at this point. And so I wanted this board to, before I supported it more, I wanted to get your presentation on this for you, and to let you know how successful it's been. So it's a really great program. We're lucky today to have Sean Hastings from NOAA come up from Santa Barbara, and he's going to talk about the program. Sean.
Thank you, and good morning, directors. Sean Hastings, I'm with NOAA's Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary, to the south of you, and very pleased to be here today to give you an overview of the Protecting Blue Whales and Blue Skies incentive-based vessel speed reduction program. As noted, we've been working with the shipping industry for almost 10 years now, specifically on this program. The federal government, through the U.S. Coast Guard, NOAA, my parent agency, and the Environmental Protection Agency, have been working with the shipping industry long before that, without much success. We've been asking ships to slow down off the California coast to reduce the risk of fatal ship strikes on endangered whales, as well as reduce air pollution and the emission of greenhouse gases. Around 2014, we decided to try a different approach, an incentive-based approach that is employed by the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach very effectively. And as noted, the program has really taken off off the South Central California coastline and off San Francisco. We've recently expanded into your waters, and we hope that you also will support this program. Just go back. Are you all looking at the same presentation I'm looking at? You don't have to turn around and look at it. Okay, good. just to enjoy that big, beautiful blue whale, I counted the first blue whale in our channel this season. They do come back seasonally, and I fly the channel once a month and count whales. There's no better way to see an animal that size. They share the waters with really big ships, and like you all, we're on the shipping highway. You don't have a major port in this region. We're getting the traffic coming in from Asia and then moving north and south. And as you see here on the left, the ship tracks, there's a lot of traffic coming in from Asia. Those are ship tracks that we get from transponders in each ship. So we know every ship, where they are, where they're going, who they are, how fast they're going. And they actually come right off your coastline, and they take a right or left to go up and down the coast, offload cargo, and then move north and south before heading back to Asia. On the right, you see these big, beautiful animals that we are charged to protect, blue fin and humpback whales. The darker blue that you see in the lower right, that is the primary habitat, the best habitat for those animals. And the point of this is to show ships and whales overlap in time and space, which is why we have this problem of ship strikes. My charge under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, Endangered Species Act, Marine Mammal Protection Act, is to protect these animals when they're visiting the California coastline, and especially when they're within national marine sanctuaries. Animals are hit, not intentionally, and unfortunately, it is the leading cause of mortality to these species. You see here a fin whale draped over the bulbous bow of a container ship. These ships often don't even know that they've hit an animal until they come to port and offload. The problem is sufficient enough that we have had to take action, which is this has led us to the Vessel Speed Reduction Program. Here you see the somewhat unconventional range of partners here. An interesting thing about the National Marine Sanctuaries Act is it charges us to create an innovative incentive-based ways for conservation. I've taken that charge, and we have established this partnership with air districts up and down the coastline, many nonprofit groups, as well as some of the best minds out there when it comes to whale science, air emission, and ocean noise. We hope to add your logo to this following today. The vessel speed reduction program is a seasonal management approach, May 1st through December 15th in the zones you see here off San Francisco and off Santa Barbara. We ask ships to slow down to 10 knots. Why 10 knots? 10 knots is a safe speed for the ships to maintain navigation, as well as it reduces the threat of fatal ship strikes by 50% on endangered whales, and it greatly reduces air emissions. They burn less fuel. And these zones match the National Marine Sanctuaries off the California coastline, and in Southern California extend well south of the Channel Island Sanctuary down to the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. I really want to emphasize that NOAA is within the Department of Commerce, and so we are trying to achieve vibrant maritime commerce on which we all depend. The global economy depends on maritime commerce. 40% of imports are coming to the California ports, and in doing so, make shipping a little more sustainable. As I mentioned, we've been working with industry for well over 10 years. The incentive approach is to give companies that slow down, and we have award tiers, the highest percentage of 85% to 100% of their entire fleet slowing down to 10 knots in these zones. We give them the Sapphire Award down to the Gold Award for fleets that slow down 60% of the distance they travel. And we do recognize companies that slow down at least 35%. There is air emission benefit, even down to 35% of the distance they travel. We sing their praises with a very positive public relations campaign, and we used to offer financial incentives. We did that for a number of years, and the companies started declining the incentives. They're not doing it for the money. To be honest, we didn't have a lot of money to give them. But it did get them to the table initially, and this year we discontinued the financial incentives, and the company said, great, no problem. We actually have more companies signing up this year. You can see the highlights from last year. These are measurable, quantifiable conservation benefits. Good for human health, great for whales, and honestly good for the planet in the reduction of greenhouse gases. I looked at my air district partners, and they tell me these numbers are significant when it comes to NOx, PM, and SOx. And on the whale side, anytime we can reduce the threat of a ship strike is positive. And in this case, in 2022, we reduced the risk by 44%. Not bad for a voluntary program. There is certainly more to do. We don't have every ship slowing down. We don't have every company involved, but we are making great progress. In 2023, we expanded the vessel speed reduction zone, which is why I'm here today, to include the entirety of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. So, we've long known up to last year that when the ships left our zone and moved into the San Francisco vessel speed reduction zone, we asked them not to speed up, and mostly they didn't. Monterey Bay has joined forces with us. The vessel speed reduction zone now extends from Point Arena in the north all the way down to Cambria, and then you can see here from Point Arguello down to Dana Point in Southern California. So we bring vessel speed reduction to you, to your communities, and we look for the Air District partnership to join us in this ongoing effort. Happy to address any questions you have, and there's lots of more information at bluewhalesblueskies.org, where everything I've shared with you is there, as well as all the press. Shipping companies absolutely love this program. We award them, we give them whale tail awards, and it's amazing how an incentive approach can work almost as effectively as a regulatory approach. So thank you for your time.
I might add just a couple of things after. Thanks so much, Sean. That was excellent. You know, ozone season is whale season. They match up perfectly. That's our ozone season. We reduce NOx emissions, you reduce ozone. And so this is a great program. It's voluntary. It's a feel-good program. It's really one that I thought the board could feel good about standing behind. GHG, greenhouse gases, have no season, so every reduction in fuel use we get is good. The shipping companies are realizing savings in fuel more than they ever got out of this other program. So if they can, if they have the time and they slow down, it's better for the world and better for us. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board.
Thank you. Any questions to my left? Yes, Mr. Hammond.
Yeah, Karen, thank you. Sean, I'm just curious, you know, what is the volume of shipping traffic through our channel up there? I mean, do you have any rough numbers of how many we would see in a month, I guess, or how do you calculate that?
Sure. So we do work with the Marine Exchange exchanges of Los Angeles and San Francisco. They're your air traffic controllers for shipping traffic. And on average, we have, it does vary, but you could, about 3,500 to 4,000 ship transits a year. And so, you know, roughly 100 plus transits a month. When I flew the channel a couple weeks ago, we counted over 50 humpback whales, which is a lot of whale. We are fortunate to have this biodiversity and rich ecosystem right off our coastline. That same day, there was a dozen ships in the channel. So it's not necessarily a static amount of traffic each day. It does vary. But roughly, you know, on average, 3 to 4 ships we're seeing a day, and it is very seasonal as well.
Right. I was going to mention, too, so it sounds like our whale population is pretty healthy, or at least certain species.
Certain species. So humpback whales are on the rebound, thankfully. It's very interesting. There's a Central American, a Mexican, and a Hawaiian stock of these. They're three distinct populations. One is threatened, one is still endangered. We do see recovery in humpbacks. Blue whales we're very concerned about. Their populations have seemingly flatlined and this is a worldwide stock of about 10,000 animals. We see about a couple thousand off the California coastline. And that's from a historic high of what we pre-whaling days of a 500,000 animals. Yeah. So. The issue with whales is one, every whale counts. These animals live as long or longer than we do. And so when you knock one off out of the water, you're losing the potential to increase that population. Fin whales are listed as threatened. They live and feed farther off the shore, coastline here. So we have this confluence of these different species in these different waters. You know, these animals have tails, they move as the ships do with propellers, and we're trying to close the gap on where we're offering protection in Southern California, off Central California, which is why we're bringing this program to your waters.
My last question is, you know, whales are migratory, so are there certain times of year that maybe speeds can be brought up because there's less of them, or do you just pretty much constant for, you know, this policy basically that's going to be year-round?
May 1st. To December 15th is the season for this particular program. That's when we see these animals return to California waters to feed. When they're here feeding, they're head down diving all day long, all night long. We're not really certain why they don't get out of the way of these ships. So in the winter months, as I think you all know, we do get gray whales migrating. They stay closer to the coastline. They are hit by ships. Their population, they came off the endangered species list, a rare success story these days. We are concerned about ship strikes on gray whales, but this program is focused in those summer months on the listed species, bluefin and humpback whales, which happens to be good for air quality as well.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions to my right. Oh, yes.
Thank you. It is a remarkable program. I'm really pleased to see it here. Following up, Mr. Hammond, do you have a sense of the percentage of the ships that obey the 10 knot, the voluntary? The app right now shows about 4 container ships in the channel, mm-hmm. in the Santa Barbara Channel,
mm-hmm.
and all but one of them's under 10, and the other guy's doing 11. So, you know?
Yes, I mean, this program is it's only gotten more popular and more effective. The Blue Whales Blue Skies program is focused on container ships, car carriers, bulkers, and this year we added tankers. Within that, in the container ship category, which are the fastest ships out there, we are seeing on average, if you look across all the fleets, upwards of 75% cooperation. I want to contrast that with the seasonal management regulations on the East Coast that my agency, we have regulated ship speed to 10 knots in zones up and down the East Coast to protect the highly endangered North Atlantic right whale. There's fewer than 350 individuals left on the planet. With enforcement, we have about an 80 to 85% compliance rate. So 75% cooperation with a voluntary program. Now, I'm focused on maintaining that, but there's still 25% out there right. that we need to slow right. down. The other shipping types range anywhere from, we have companies not involved at all, to about an average of 60% overall when you look across all shipping types. 60% cooperation is not bad, but again, I'm focused on the 40% to try and get them to slow down to 10 knots.
I'll give a shout out also for the safety benefits to the recreational boating community. A container ship at 22 knots is a scary thing on a foggy day.
Absolutely, yes.
Pretty amazing.
That brings up the shipping lanes that go through the Santa Barbara Channel, which we do cross. It is like playing Frogger, if you remember that game. The best way to solve this problem is to separate the conflict, separate ships and whales, move ships farther offshore. It reduces the onshore emissions on our coastal communities. We've done that to the extent we can in Southern California. Recently extended shipping lanes farther west to get those ships into deeper water. We created an area to be avoided, which is an internationally recognized designation that goes on charts. I was recently virtually in London pushing these proposals through the International Maritime Organization. We are working in many different directions to reduce the impacts of shipping and maintain that commerce. There's only so far you can push ships, move ships, and so that's where vessel speed comes in. And off your coastline, there are no designated shipping lanes. And so we are working with the Coast Guard to designate a fairway about 50 miles off your coastline. That would push the ships a little farther out. That should bring some benefit, but we still have to slow them down to burn less fuel and stop running over whales.
There had been talk about routing the shipping lanes south of the Channel Islands and taking them out of the channel itself, but that met some resistance. The extra distance didn't seem to be huge, but...
Well, that would be the much larger federal agency known as the Department of Defense.
There's them.
20% of the traffic does go south of the islands. We've been in negotiation with the Navy. The traffic goes there anyway, and we are, you'll see our vessel speed reduction zone includes those waters. We are seeing high cooperation of vessels slowing down there. And the fairways that I discussed, which are coming soon, we hope, has been negotiated with the Coast Guard. We're not going to get all the traffic offshore. That's something we've just had to accept. There is interruption to weapons training when ships come through. And so we're trying to balance a lot of different interests here. And certainly there's been a lot of push for moving it all south. That's not going to happen. I don't see that happening soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just have a couple of curiosity questions. So how much time does it add on to a ship once they hit that 10 knots? Is there a calculation on that?
Sure. It all depends. I mean, these different ship classes, the car carriers versus the container ships, bulkers and tankers, those classes travel generally pretty slowly, 12-ish, 13 knots. But as I was talking with your air district staff here, 2 knots makes a big difference in air emissions, and it reduces the risk of ship strikes down substantially. It all depends. I've having worked in this space for a little over 15 years and working with the industry, I've started to kind of reframe the discussion and the question to schedule adjustment, not necessarily looking at time lost because there is fuel saved and environmental impacts gained. with a different schedule. And so, you know, it used to be these ships were traveling 20 knots. That's quite fast. In our zone in Santa Barbara, which is 100 nautical miles, if you slow them down to 10 knots, you're doubling their time in this in that area. So 20 knots, 100 miles, right? 10 knots, so 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The other direction we're going with this, just to put in perspective and broaden the discussion a little bit, instead of focused on how much time do I lose, what does that cost? As Gary noted, they save so much in fuel, it outweighs any time lost. 60% of their operating costs is fuel. So when they burn a lot less fuel, they're saving millions of dollars. But from a consumer perspective, because those ships are filled with all the stuff that we buy, that we want, can we wait 2, 3, 4 hours for the nails to get to Home Depot or the iPhone to hit the shelf? Now, with refrigerated products, that's a different story. But in general, there's no consumer impact that we see. And we're broadening this input, this discussion, so that we're looking at this a little more holistically.
Sure.
But we do account for, and we have done economic analysis that show marginal savings to marginal costs, depending on the ship class.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I'm very supportive. What I was just curious about is, do you have any idea on the transition from the fossil fuel engines to electric engine? Because I know that's a big push in the maritime. And I'm couching all this based on Bureau of Ocean Energy Management in our situation in regards to offshore wind. And so just kind of learning still on there's so many factors here in consideration of how things will work. So that's just curious, as I noted.
No, it's a very good point. Cleaner fuels are in our future, thankfully. Cleaner engines, tier three engines are coming our way. Less than 5% of ships are tier three engine classified, and that is expected to increase. Tier three engines run more efficiently at higher speeds. That's not going to be good for whales. It's going to be good for air quality. And so we are aware of this future. That's probably 10 to 15 years out from here. So between now and then, this is why we're exercising this program.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I was surprised to see that the ships, you know, being offshore are contributing, you know, 61% of the, you know, when I didn't know anything about it, so I looked it up. What else produces it? Well, automobiles and, you know, other cars and stuff like that. So that kind of surprised me. Question I have is, first of all, how far offshore is the shipping lane that these,
so
they're going north and south?
Yeah, well, it depends on what part of the shore you're looking
at. Well,
out from.
Off of San Luis Obispo County.
Well, there is no established shipping lanes. When they leave the Santa Barbara Channel, the right around Point Arguello is where they exit the internationally designated shipping lanes. They don't pick up any designated traffic lane until they get off Monterey Bay. And then they head into San Francisco with well-established shipping lanes to get them in and out of San Francisco. So off your coastline, the ships range anywhere from 25 to 50 miles offshore.
25 to 50. And you said 50 is about the max that we would be able, or it could be regulated to say that you can't come within that. I mean.
So, yeah, we are working with the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard has it's known as a port access route study. In light of wind energy and other industrial uses of the ocean, open ocean aquaculture, the Coast Guard is trying to get in front of managing ships and establishing shipping areas, shipping lanes, so we can maintain commerce from the Mexican border up to Canada. Off your coastline, the fairways that are being proposed, there's fairways, there's routes, there's shipping lanes, but to organize traffic off your coastline, it's going to be about 50 miles offshore.
And if all the ships were within that 50 miles or outside or whatever, how much of an impact would that have on the nitrous oxide levels in the county onshore?
So whale
right now it's at 61%. I mean, would we see a reduction in that if knowing ships aren't going to be closer to shore?
So whale guy turns to air quality friend.
We haven't calculated that. We don't violate the NOx standard. We violate the ozone standard. So it just puts us small background because it dilutes that far off the coast for us. However, we are held federally and statewide to those emissions. So in our federal non-attainment area, we can count those reductions as reductions for our county. You know, our county divided into the eastern and western attainment areas. We're attainment for the federal standard on the western side of our county. On the eastern side, we're non-attainment. So that's the only requirements we have to reduce NOx and to do that. And we're moderately non-attainment. So we have, right now we don't have that much of a push. But what's going to happen as they lower these standards down is we'll probably need those reductions on paper to get the ozone down. Now, realistically, in the western part of our county where 98% of our residents live in, we won't see that much of a measurable drop in ozone. It will drop, but not measurable. So that's where we sit right now, that far offshore. Together with compared to what we generate near shore NOx emissions, it's a small amount, but legal requirements to reduce tons, we get to count it. Paper credits, but you know what? The federal government is full of paper requirements. So, and they can cause you to have, requirements on local businesses because you don't have the paper requirements. So in the future, this will help us.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Pichon.
Yeah, just a couple quick questions. I did find it interesting that the tankers, which are importing oil from Venezuela, are now part of your program to bring us oil that we can't produce it here, but that's great. So nice job. But the bigger question is on the maritime, on the sanctuaries. So we don't have a sanctuary. You haven't taken a position on a sanctuary in our general area. There is an application in to NOAA, but I don't think you've taken a position, have you?
So the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary is in a designation phase, and the draft planning documents, environmental impact statement, are expected to be released publicly. Anytime something goes back to DC, we lose a little control of the timeline. I'm told soon. Soon can be 2 weeks or 4 weeks. And following that will be a series of public workshops and then public comment on that. The sanctuary program is interested in a Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. It would geographically connect as one of the proposed boundary, and there are several alternatives. Cambria, or the southern end of the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, to the offshore component of Channel Island Sanctuary.
Okay, because I'm not supportive of it. We've had it before. And to me, it's the ban on commercial fishing. Like the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, you know, they put a ban on all commercial fishing in that maritime. I think it's a heritage center or whatever the designation is of that area. So I'm worried that we're going to shut down the commercial fishing industry in San Luis Obispo County. But I do like the fact that it's a voluntary program. So it's interesting about the incentives, like the monetary incentives. They just decided on their own, these companies, to forego the monetary amounts.
So it was an ongoing discussion where and we varied the incentive amounts. It was a grand policy experiment to see what could we get to bring the industry to the table, and then what would they accept going forward. And each year we started seeing companies decline it, and we said, well, you know, if you decline the incentive funds, they roll forward into keeping the program going, as well as more positive public relations. So those companies that declined, we noted publicly that they're not doing this for the money. That sort of caught on to the point where 75% of the funding was not accepted and rolled into the program going forward. So it was an ongoing discussion with the companies. They value the not hitting whales and not polluting and the positive public relations. And I have to believe also that they value not moving toward regulation. So, you know, an incentive has a disincentive side to it, but it's working well. We have, of those companies that I showed that are performing at levels that we want them to, that accounts for 90% of all the container traffic coming to California. So I mentioned there are some other companies not involved. It's not a large percentage of commerce that is not engaged yet. We are working to engage them.
And I did notice that because there's a number of the factors from Hawaii. They get, they're not part of your coalition. And I just wondered, you know, because I get a lot of their, you know, even like their milk, you know, they, I don't think they have any dairies left in all of Hawaii. It all comes out of Southern California, right? So, you know, so I guess you're working on getting those to, or asking them to be part of this program.
Yeah, you're referring to Mattson and Pasha. Those are the two primary.
Well, you have younger brothers, I think, right? So you have picked up one big one there.
And Mattson has been in and out of our program.
Okay.
Their business model and how they remain competitive is to offer fast service.
Mm-hmm.
So over their competitors. We are in discussion with them. They do understand what we're trying to do. Yes, refrigeration. There are refrigeration costs associated with this. We believe we will be able to bring them into the fold eventually. And so we are working with them very closely.
In a voluntary way.
Voluntary way.
Okay.
And just from what I've seen, at least with the Chumash Heritage documents, there's no ban on commercial fishing.
Yeah, there wasn't either on the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and then it appeared a couple years later after they got it passed. So I fully expect it to come. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Hammond, did you have a question?
I had one other question. Maybe Gary can... knowledge of big ship emissions. I mean, I know they burn the dirty bunker oil kind of thing, and that's the problem. But do they have regulations on cleaning their emissions, or is there, are they just burn it and put it out the stack? And
you know, there are some federal requirements that are being phased in, but they're not, you know, they're not that
stringent
at this point. You know, I'm not unsure what the federal government is doing right now. I know that in California, there's and in other areas in the country, that they're held to attainment standards on local businesses based upon emissions that are federally controlled. So there's a push for more of that right now, including including trains and interstate trucks as well. The San Joaquin Valley and in particular, and the Mojave Air District have really been pressing the federal government to do something, because they're squeezing local businesses of the requirements, and they can't get the reductions. It's theoretically impossible to reach attainment in those areas without these federal emission sources being reduced, and they keep putting more onerous requirements on their local businesses, and so you can't even you're not going to be able to build anything in a lot of these areas unless the federal government steps in. So I expect that that's going to be, you know, something that we see more and more in the next 20 years.
Well, I know that we as an agency have helped Morro Bay fishermen, you know, with marine engines and things like that, I believe, haven't we?
We are currently funding several boats out of Morro Bay.
Great. Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, there's no catalytic converters on these big ships. There are systems where you can implement. Put one on when it's in port, and there's technology to scrub the emissions. One of the emerging technologies that we're not very excited about is, I always get this backwards, I think it's a closed loop system that pushes the emissions through a catalytic converter into the water. Well, that keeps the carbon and pollution out of the air, but it just puts it in the ocean. And so we're concerned about that impacts on fisheries, water quality, et cetera. So, you know, we're on the shipping highway, and so we are bearing the brunt of these impacts. The legal issue is these are mobile sources of pollution, and so as Gary noted, your jurisdiction, our jurisdiction constrains onshore emitters, and it's the offshore ones that are really the root of our pollution problems right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seems like an amazing program, and it's really inspiring that the compliance has been voluntary. And I can only imagine how bad the optics are to have your ship arrive in Long Beach with a dead whale on it. So question, in terms of populations, what about orcas? Are those guys ever involved with ships? I'm just wondering, we just saw a bunch of them up in Monterey.
Sure. Quite a scene up there in Monterey this year. It is amazing. And we do get transient pods of orcas down this way. So the issue with orcas and ships is noise. And so our partners at the Port of Vancouver, who we're working with, they are also slowing ships down to and from the port up there. And the impact of noise on a marine mammal that uses echolocation to find its food is quite dramatic. These ships are really noisy underwater. Just for reference in human terms, you go to a concert, and it can be 150, 160 decibels. Ships underwater, the propellers churning up all that, creating a lot of air bubbles. Those billions of air bubbles popping is what creates ocean noise. And with a container ship going 15, 20 knots, that can be 180 decibels. So imagine having a rock concert go through your dining room when you're trying to feed. That also disrupts echolocation. So slow ships down, you reduce ocean noise. It is noted in our program, it's just not very well understood. It is one of the fourth benefit of the program. Lower emissions, lower GHGs, reduced ship strikes, and reduction of ocean noise as ships slow down.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll open this for public comment. I have no speaker slips. Anyone care to? Seeing none, bring it back for comment. And we are looking for a motion to authorize and approve the APCO to support
Madam
this
Chair,
program.
I'll go ahead and make a motion. Yeah, I'd like to make a motion for staff recommendation to authorize the APCO to support the Blue Whales Blue Skies partnership with Cleaner Air.
Second.
Whale safety and quieter ocean.
Thank you.
Second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none.
Motion is to approve, authorize the APCO to support the Blue Whales, Blue Skies, and Voluntary Vessel Reduction Program. Motion is made by Director Hammond, seconded by Director Wixom. Director Arnold.
Crash. Yes.
Thank you. Director Bright.
Yes.
Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Seacrest.
Yes.
Director Wixom.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Vote is unanimous.
Marvelous. Excellent. Thank you so much. That was a great presentation and really good information. We move now to board member items. Any to my right? Seeing none, to my left? Mr.
Hammond?
I was going
to say thank you, Gary, for agreeing to go another 2 years. I mean, the plan is obviously to find somebody in the future here soon because you want to retire, want to have a little quieter life, I imagine, but that's the plan.
Yeah, that's the plan. We're in a spot of transition still, so foregoing my planned retirement I felt was the right thing to do. There's some things I want to button up and have the new director have a good path, a good plan. You know, there's financial and legal things that need to be wrapped up in the next year and a half, 2 years. So I want to make sure we're on good footing. And I thank this board for your support.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no other, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
10:12.
Congratulations,
Carla.